As I was packing last weekend, her last week, to go to the Metaphysical Bible Conference in Independence, I received a text from a good friend, and it said, "I hope you're not like this." And it was accompanied by this graphic. "Going on a trip, need about 4 outfits. I pack 35 just to be sure." And have you not? I have been in the airport, checking in and seeing people down on their hands and knees, taking clothing and all sorts of things out of their luggage. Some of you are shaking their heads, just to meet the weight limit. I think we've all been there. We've all seen that, right? So what happens when we overpack, when we drag things with us that we really don't need? Well, for one thing, our suitcases become very heavy, do they not? And the longer we have to carry them around, the heavier they become. Sometimes feeling like that. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the power of renunciation, our spiritual power to actually remove, release, denounce, deny, say no, and let go. And I know right after that talk, you all rushed home and cleaned out your closets, right? Well, it's been said that the first step in crafting the life you want is to get rid of everything you don't want. And remember, as hard as it is for some of us to part with cherished physical items, it's much harder to release our mental baggage. According to Jim Rosmerge, some of what needs to be released can actually serve as barriers to our experiencing the divine. In his book, The Gathering, he advises us to release any part of our human self that might be acting as a barrier to God. Well, we know the divine presence does not build barriers, so who builds them? We do. We absolutely do. And so the compelling question was posed, what are you willing to release to move forward in your spiritual journey? And it might be different for all of us. But guess what is suggested to be the greatest barrier of all? What do you think? You all sneaked a peek at the title, didn't you? I know you did. It wasn't very subtle today. Unforgiveness. Unforgiveness, according to Jim Rosmerge, he actually says, please know that unforgiveness is probably the most prevalent barrier to our experience of the presence of God. We justify our anger, and it becomes resentment. And if it's fed long enough by hurtful memories, thoughts of revenge and acts of retaliation, it grows into hatred. And he says a hate-filled soul cannot feel God's love. It doesn't mean the love isn't there. God's love is always there, but we need to feel it from within. We may strike out at another person or situation, but our hands are actually around our own throat, restricting our ability to breathe peace and harmony into the situation. And Jesus taught again and again the spiritual practice of forgiveness, often linking it with prayer and healing. In Matthew 18, 21 to 22, is probably one of the most well-known of his teachings. This is when Peter comes to him and says, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to 7 times? And Jesus says to him, I do not say to you up to 7 times, but up to 70 times 7. Now, to understand Peter's question, we need to look a little bit at the historical context. Rabbis at the time taught that 3 strikes, or 3 times, was the limit for human forgiveness. And maybe that is the origin of that 3 strikes and you're outlaw, I don't know. But the teaching was that humans were not allowed to forgive 4 times because that would be forgiving more than God. And hence, a person could not ever forgive more than God. Peter must have taken the rabbi's commandment, doubled it, and added 1 for good measure, I guess. I'm not sure how he came up with that. But taken literally, it might mean something like this. As you can clearly see by this ledger, you've been forgiven 490 times, and you're no longer covered by the biblical policy. Your forgiveness is over, okay? Now, obviously, we don't think that's what Jesus meant. So to understand his response, we need to look at the symbolic significance of the numbers here. 7 represents completeness, and 70 signifies perfect spiritual order and power. So really, Jesus seems to be telling Peter that there should be no limit to forgiveness, so that we need to forgive completely and perfectly. Now, in Matthew, earlier in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect." Now, sometimes in our human skins, we have a little trouble with that concept of being perfect, don't we? It seems like it's very hard to measure up. But interestingly, the Greek word translated as perfect is teleos, which really means complete or whole. So Jesus is simply saying, be that which God has designed you to be. Be whole. And we know, of course, that God is love, right? Pure and unconditional. So created in the image and likeness of the divine, as we studied in Genesis, we are love. God is always true to God's spiritual nature, but when we dwell in anger and hatred, we're simply not being true to ours, to our divine identity. Forgiveness is the gate to the kingdom of heaven that Jesus talked about so much. And when we allow our minds and hearts to be hardened with hatred and resentment, we close the gate. Also in Matthew 5:38, Jesus tells us to turn the other cheek. It says, but if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. That's a verse that's given people problems, you know, if you interpret it literally. I just can't imagine our way shower meaning for us to invite repeated physical abuse. I mean, Jesus was no wimp. He faced the Pharisees. He drove the money changers out of the temple. He was strong and full of action. Metaphysically, turning the other cheek simply means turning away from the conflict to a higher form of energy. When we forgive, we acknowledge that someone may have done something destructive, but we make the choice to respond from our higher nature, to turn from our human selves to our spiritual selves, to turn to the power of the divine, to give back a positive, affirmative energy to the person or situation. Now, Charles Fillmore says that forgiveness is the process of giving up the false for the true. So to forgive, some mental attitude or some form of mental energy must be transformed. In other words, turning the other cheek. And Emily Cady says, to forgive is to give for, to give something, some definite good in return for evil or error. Now, the last time I spoke about forgiveness, and it's been several years, in a Sunday lesson, I entitled my talk, Peeling the Onion. I don't know if anybody remembers that. But never mind, some people were disappointed that the talk was not going to be a cooking demonstration. Trust me, I'm not the one to do that, okay? But today, I'd like us to think of a time in our lives when we worked on forgiveness, or might be working on it right this moment. It's a process. And I'd like you to consider why peeling an onion might be a good metaphor for forgiveness. Does anybody have any ideas? It's layered, I heard. It's hard. There are tears. Very good. You all are, that's really good. How many of you wake up in the morning and say to yourselves, oh, goody, today I get to peel an onion? Right? I mean, it's not something we usually look forward to, is it? It's hard, it's messy, it's time-consuming. The only time that I really enjoy the process of peeling an onion is when Bob does it, okay? Which I appreciate, Bob, and he does it a lot. Unfortunately, forgiveness is something we have to do ourselves with the help of the Christ. It's an inside job. And some onions, let's face it, are harder to peel than others, aren't they? They really are. And the thing is, unlike a zucchini or a carrot, somebody back there said it, an onion has many layers. So in the process of forgiveness, there may be layers of hurt, judgment, hurt, judgment, anger, and resentment. And all those layers have to be peeled. And if it is myself I have to forgive, there likely might be layers of regret and guilt. And the longer I have to deal with the onion, the more likely I am to cry. Somebody said that also. So dreading that, maybe I just avoid or postpone picking up that onion in the first place. I mean, you can always buy them chopped in the grocery store, in the produce section, right? You don't have to do it. And have you ever thought an onion was completely peeled, only to find that when you start to chop it, there are some invisible layers that are still clinging on? Has that happened to anybody? Okay, well, have you ever thought you've forgiven someone or some situation, only to find hidden layers of anger and resentment just resurfacing? Somebody said. Oh, yeah, I am with you. Oh, yeah. It's a process. And if we let our resentments go and then they return, we just have to keep peeling the onion until it is done. And perhaps in order to learn to really forgive, we first must realize how much harm unforgiveness can do to our souls, our bodies, and our lives. I know we've all heard that quote, and I remember exactly who it was. Doris Wilkes said it to me for the first time, although I don't think I can give you credit for saying it. I'm not sure who started it, Doris. Maybe Sig Paulson, I'm not sure. The quote is, "Harboring unforgiveness is like taking poison and hoping the other person dies. It doesn't work." It doesn't work, okay? Or in the words of the Buddha, it's like picking up a hot coal to throw at your enemy. And guess who gets burned, right? So, yes, we might be entitled to our disappointments and our anger at another's wrongdoing. Those emotions can be cathartic and healthy. They can be. They can help us in the healing process. However, we cannot let the unforgiven live rent-free in our heads. It's too much of a price to pay. If we're unable to resolve our hurt, it wreaks a corresponding amount of destruction on our own bodies and souls. And forgiveness promises countless benefits, and these are not from a spiritual source. These are from the Mayo Clinic website. And what are the benefits of forgiving someone? Healthier relationships, greater spiritual and psychological well-being, less anxiety, stress, and hostility, lower blood pressure, fewer symptoms of depression, and lower risk of alcohol and substance abuse. And in addition to that, which I didn't get on the screen, a stronger immune system. So, here's the thing. Forgiveness doesn't mean that we deny the fact that another person hurt us. Neither do we deny the feelings associated with that possible betrayal. Forgiveness doesn't minimize or justify the error of another. It's simply a process, a decision to let go, to use our power of renunciation to release a past experience and not let it destroy our present happiness. You may have heard the story of the two monks who were traveling along the countryside, and they came to a river, and there was a woman perched at the edge of the river, who was terrified to cross. And so the two monks had taken a vow never to touch a woman. So monk number one just absolutely took one look at her, ignored her, jumped in the river, and swam across. But monk number two looked in her eyes, and he felt so sorry for her. He had compassion for her. So he said to her, "You know what? I will carry you across as I swim." So he carried her across to the other side, immediately released her as soon as she got to the other side, and she thanked him. And the two monks went on their journey, and they walked for miles and miles. And the first monk seemed angry, and he finally just couldn't stand it any longer. So he looked at the second monk, and he said, "I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you broke your vow to carry that woman across the river. What is the matter with you?" And he went on and on and on and on and on and on. And the monk who had carried the woman across just finally had enough himself. And he looked at his friend and he said, "You know what? You accuse me, but I carried that woman across the river and I let her go. You have been carrying her for 2 hours." And the point is, how long have some of us, myself included, been carrying our baggage? A lot longer than necessary. And there's another true story. I'm not sure if that one is true, but there's another true story of a rabbi who survived the Holocaust. "Before coming to America," he said, "I had to forgive Adolf Hitler. I did not want to bring Hitler with me in my head to my new country." And that wise man knew that to forgive is to set a prisoner free and know that that prisoner is ourselves. So now, even if we understand and we agree with all of this, we agree that forgiveness is a good thing, let's just be honest. In our human skins, it isn't easy. And in fact, William Fisher, in his book, The Mastercraft of Life, and this is from the chapter on forgiveness, says, forgiveness is one of the most difficult acts in the spiritual repertoire that we are called upon to perform. Well, that's not encouraging, is it? However, he doesn't say impossible. He simply says it's difficult. And so I'd like to share some insights that some spiritual leaders offer about how we might forgive ourselves and others. And for perhaps the first one, the most important one, is simply to realize that forgiveness is within our power. Moment by moment, thought by thought, we do have a choice. Remember Genesis and the dominion piece. We have dominion over our thoughts and feelings. In fact, in an article in Unity Magazine, Carla McClellan notes that current research tells us that we're actually wired for both revenge and forgiveness, and we have the capacity to make the choice to choose either response. We can harbor blame and resentment, trapping ourselves in that prison of the past. We can give those negative memories power when we stay stuck in our stories, wallow in the hurt, constantly replaying painful scenarios over and over again in our heads like a bad movie. Anybody ever done that? I have. I remember one sentence my mother said to me once. One sentence among all the beautiful, wonderful things she said to me, one pretty yucky thing she said to me, and I held it forever. I held it for a long, long time. And finally, I just thought, this is it. I'm letting it go. It's not helping me. I'm letting it go. So we can choose. We can make that choice to release those past hurts and live in the present now, the precious present now, claiming our oneness, our completeness, no matter what anyone says or does. There's an old Zen saying, I know I've shared it before, but it's so appropriate here. You cannot keep birds from flying around your head, but you can keep them from making nests in your hair. It's so true. We need to ask ourselves sometimes, what is the lesson? What is the lesson from this situation? What can I take away from it? How can I use it to grow? How can I use it to be who I am intended to be, instead of just harboring it? So in addition, number one, if realizing that forgiveness is possible, we also, knowing that it's possible, need to do something that the chaplains talked about yesterday, not in relation to forgiveness, but in relation to prayer, and that is we must set the intention. As Jim Rosemergy calls it, we must set the intention. We must simply become willing to forgive. We need to affirm, I willingly forgive myself, I willingly forgive others. This means we are saying we are willing to return to the love which we are, knowing that no person or circumstance can diminish or destroy our essence without our permission. Robert Brummett, in the book Living Originally, calls this the decision phase. And he says, once we set the intention, once we decide, we make that decision, I will forgive, then we enter into prayer and meditation, the whole universe opens to support our process. And thirdly, we need to understand that forgiveness is a process of healing. Brummett also says that forgiveness may involve feeling or some underlying hurt or sadness. Often it does. That's why we hold on to it. But that is simply part of the healing process. Seeking vengeance against a perpetrator may be a way to mask or assuage our pain. Even when there have been horrific acts, and we all know, we could list a million horrific acts that happen every day in our society, acts like murder or child abuse, even if we feel totally justified in our blame and condemnation, the price we pay for holding on to that is a continuation of unhealed wounds. And when it is ourselves we need to forgive, Brummett says we become the criminal. Just think about it. We become the criminal, the judge, and the executioner, all wrapped up into one. Our main adversary in forgiveness is often our own consciousness. And when we turn to a higher power and presence, that power and presence is within every single one of us, each of us will find the inner wisdom to discover what specific strategies will work for us. It might be keeping a journal. How many of you have done that? I know a lot of people keep spiritual journals. It might be keeping a journal or doing a prayerful reflection every night before you go to bed, as Charles Fillmore did. I listened to the tape from last week, and I know that Lee shared that story with you, that was his process every single night before he went to bed. He spent a long time reviewing every moment of his day and asking himself, is there anything I need to forgive today to keep it from building up? It may be keeping a forgiveness log. I'm going to give you a resource about that in a minute. Or, as many people have tried and a lot of experts suggest, it may be writing a letter to the person who offended you. How many have done that? I've done that several times. It's very helpful. Jim Rosemergy says this is probably the best way, or one of the best ways, to pour out the pain and resentment, release the venom that is destroying your life or ruining your life. He also suggests you finish the letter, wait 3 days, reread your letter, and then ceremoniously burn it, just like we do in the burning bowl. Make it a burning sacrifice. Then, he has another addition though, then you write a blessing letter to a newborn child, blessing the infant with all the wisdom and love and goodness that you can possibly imagine. Next, you change the salutation of the letter to the name of the person you wish to forgive. Okay, then you read that letter every morning and every night for 40 days. What does 40 represent metaphysically? As long as it takes. That's exactly right. As long as it takes. As long as it takes to peel the onion. Now, if you're not a writer, and not everyone is, you can exercise your power of imagination in guided visualizations where you see the person you need to forgive in the love as the love of God. Or you can make it a point to engage in inspirational readings and short memoirs about the promise of forgiveness. I actually have a present for you today as you leave the sanctuary if you want it. And if you're interested, our ushers are going to be at the doors as you exit. And I have complimentary copies of a wonderful Unity booklet straight from the village called The Freedom of Forgiveness. And it has a lot of really good articles and poems and strategies in it. And if you want to try that forgiveness log that I mentioned earlier, it's on pages 20 and 21. So take one if you'd like to as you leave. And if none of these strategies that I've talked about today or none of the strategies in the book help you, do an internet search. I mean, you know, the divine works through the internet too, right? I Googled the other day strategies for forgiveness, and I found 4,900,000 links. So that'll take you a while to research that. The important thing is simply to set the intention and know that you absolutely have the power and you will be guided to your best strategy for forgiveness. That's the important thing. So in the end, the idea, the concept of forgiveness is really a gift that you give to yourself. Forgiveness leads us to that plane of peace where we realize our oneness. The promise of forgiveness is about remembering who we are and the fact that we are all one. It is our mission, my favorite quote now, it is our mission to express all the qualities we can imagine God to be. And that means love and peace and harmony. And when we forgive, we restore our own hearts and souls to their original states of wholeness and perfection. And in that process, we discover the freedom of being who we were created to be, and we bring peace and harmony not only to ourselves, but to our community and to the whole world. And so it is. So let's take a moment now just to affirm the power and presence within each one of us that makes this possible. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life: God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life: God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.